Smoky Saga number 16. Upon a time warp. February 11th, 3:49 p.m. It was an especially chilly Tuesday at 26 degrees Fahrenheit. The sky precipitated lightly, just enough so that the city was tucked under a thin blanket of white, but just not enough to close offices or schools. An extra wave of sound was added to the atmosphere by the otherwise silent cars zooming down the wet, slushy highways. The ombrophobes, who greatly preferred snow, were happy to leave their umbrellas behind and put on their heavy coats and boots along with everyone else. It was a relatively light snow drizzle, though the snowfall was slightly more aggressive on the north side of town than the south. The city was essentially draped in one gigantic heart at this time of year. The greeting card publishers and candy manufacturers were active around the clock. That little extra dash of love had been fanned into the air, descending on the city population and gently soothing it into a more than usually romantic mood. At the Denmore Academy, one of the more prestigious schools in the Midwestern metropolis, the hints of romance were as strong as anywhere else. The buildings, hallways, lecture rooms, labs, and auditoriums were more than a bit sporadically lined with hearts in the form of illustrations, paintings, cutouts, paper chains, and the like. Most of the school's body of students, which majored, no pun intended, in age on the late teens and 20s, but ranged up to the 50s or even beyond, we're looking at least to a moderate degree forward to Friday, many already setting up dates with their significant others and better halves. Some of them were not so jazzed, that mainly was those who hadn't to this point in their lives become fortunate enough to have discovered someone with whom to share a significant chunk of their lives. Some of them weren't affected very much at all one way or the other, those who considered the day just another 24 hours in the month of February, which were inflated into a big deal by the aforementioned advertisers and greeting card companies. One single young lady in particular was a bit excited, though she had neither plans nor a man to take her out for dinner or a movie. Her name was Nina Seidler, and she could pretty well be described as a classic girl next door in both looks and personality. She was 20, 5'5", light brunette, eyes a color halfway between sapphire blue and emerald green, average size, average weight, average measurements. Nothing too out of proportion. She was a nice person, good-hearted, a few of what some would call personality flaws, but nothing severe. She was a pretty garden-variety, run-of-the-mill, unattached college girl. Her friend, Steph Reed, however, with whom she had a few classes together and met up before and after other classes, was not considered quite as average. Steph was very pretty. Blue-eyed blondie, pleasing measurements, long legs she liked to show off whenever she could, and she was a nice girl too. Comely and sweet. Young and older men were drawn to her almost magnetically. Nina was a little jealous of her, but not very. For the most, Nina wasn't actually attracted to guys her own age. This was a quirk of hers that stood out. She was particularly nitpicky with choosing a potential mate. There was a number of reasons. 20-year-old men, she found, were of course all different, but while some were immature, some had seemed to mentally mature a little too much. Some were less than cute, others were so handsome Nina considered them out of her proverbial league. A lot of them were really nice guys, some were the notoriously known bad boys, with whom she was familiar but didn't really grasp the attraction. She'd occasionally see a girl practically faint and fall all over herself chasing a bad boy, and when she got him, inevitably sooner or later he'd demonstrate his badness and it was over. Nina didn't get it. What was the point? And she was equally confused about why a lot of the guys conversely seemed to chase the bad girls. It wasn't hard to see why they pursued the looser girls, but why, Nina wondered, would anyone want to be with someone who treated them badly? She was a nice girl, she thought. Did that mean she was supposed to go after a bad guy? It didn't make sense. She didn't want a mean person. Call her crazy, but she wanted to be in the company of someone who was good to her and to whom she could be good back. What a novel approach to courting, she thought. But the biggest reason she didn't date guys her own age was that she was drawn to older men. She couldn't explain why, but they turned her on wildly. Maybe it was all the combined life knowledge they'd accumulated. Maybe it was the way age could be read in their appearance, the wrinkles and laugh lines in their faces, their strong, pelose hands. Maybe it was that they were more collectively grown up and behaved like gentlemen. Or maybe it was because she found a little grayness around a man's temples incredibly sexy. And her attraction to them went yet deeper than this. Older men seemed to know how to, well, as just described before, behave like gentlemen and regard the women in their lives as ladies. She didn't see a lot of dudes her age pulling out a girl's seat for her to sit, or standing up with her when she got up to powder her nose. But then again, she also didn't see a lot of chicks her age curtsying or watching their language or asking a guy politely for something she wanted. She thought it only fair that if a girl expected a guy to be a gentleman and treat her like a lady, she should behave like one, and vice versa. She eventually arrived at the unfortunate conclusion that such displays on either part would appear bizarre to her peers here in the 21st century. Nina might not have been fortunate enough to have been born and brought up in an age where manners and class were more prevalent, but she did her best to be ladylike when in public. She looked after her hygiene, she tried never to curse in front of people if she could help it, and she wore a lot of dresses, though that was more because she liked them and thought they were pretty. She may not have had legs quite as amazing as Steph's, but hers were shown off a good bit, too. In the winter, they just added pantyhose to their wardrobes, which may have been kind of aggravating, but enabled them both to wear their dresses and not freeze to death. Nina liked to have her presence acknowledged if some sort of inappropriate or misogynistic behavior was being exhibited, and someone discouraged it, explaining, "There's a lady present." She appreciated it, but she didn't really like that it only went the one way. She had a group of friends to whom she and Steph belonged, with both men and women around, and now and then one of the girls might slip over Nina's line of comfort with a misandric remark or a dirty joke, at which point she felt obligated to pipe up, "Hey, watch it, there are gentlemen present." But then she would have to explain to them that, no, she wasn't kidding. Steph was her best friend of the lot, so she knew Nina pretty well, knew her characteristics and interests and pet peeves like these. They'd known each other for close to 8 years. So Steph respected Nina's feelings about these subjects when they were hanging out together, even though they weren't affected so much by the same things. Steph was more concerned with checking out guys, still living with her parents, working someplace other than Burger King one day, and doing well enough academically to get her degree, and maybe getting to work at, say, Burger King's corporate office instead. Nina didn't have a job right now, but she actually really liked still living with her parents, for several reasons, and her folks still loved having her around. And this was the area in which Steph was jealous of her. Nina's parents had money. They didn't just have money. They had money. Nina didn't know if or when she might be needing, wanting, or getting a job, but for now they were still working their way through school. Nina didn't have that much trouble doing well in school in most subjects. Steph didn't have all the trouble in the world either, but she did have to work a little harder than Nina to be successful academically. Luckily, they had the benefit of each other's help when roadblocks were encountered. They were both a little indecisive on their majors. Nina had started out as a music major, but was now leaning more towards art. Steph had started as a drama major, but was now leaning more towards she didn't know what. Her interest in acting had started to dwindle, and she wasn't sure yet what she wanted to do, but in the meantime, there was one course shared in their respective curriculums, which was fine arts. Today was the day of the week they both had the class together. Steph also had it on Mondays, and Nina also Wednesdays. The class was, on the surface, directly up Nina's alley, as her interest in art had been developing more and more all the time since she hit her 20s. Yet, ironically, this turned into a class in which Steph wound up needing to help Nina out quite a bit. The reason was, the course was taught by a man named Gerald Watkins. He had been in the teaching game for a good long time now. He was 50 years old, and Nina was irrepressibly in love with him. On the first Tuesday of this semester, when Nina met him for the first time, her mind worked up a little crush on him. It had only been a month ago, but Nina was a born romantic. This was how fast her heart worked once it took the wheel. Today, February 11th, would be the 11th time she sat in his classroom. Around class 7 or 8, Nina decided she was intensely enamored of this man, Jerry, as she affectionately referred to him. He was in remarkable shape for 50. Good build, lanky frame, broad shoulders. He had that touch of gray around the temples that Nina found so captivating, and a deep, rich voice that turned her knees into jello. On January 28th, it had seemed to Steph that Nina was acting a little strange. But by February 4th, she knew something weird was up. Suddenly, it seemed to her, Nina was no longer taking notes or paying attention to what Professor Watkins was saying. Steph looked over at Nina in the seat beside her, and the notebook was open, but nothing was written in it. Nina had her elbows propped on the desk, an idle pen between her fingers, and her chin in her hands, gazing dreamily at the professor. Steph waved a hand in front of her. She did nothing. She just sat with that lovesick expression written all over her face. This was more than an adolescent crush. Nina had learned quite a bit in her teens, and she knew what she liked, and now what she wanted. Gerald wasn't at all aware she was feeling this way. If he noticed her specifically in the midst of the 30 or so other students in the room, chin on her hands, a silly smile of adoration on her face, eyes glossed in hopeless devotion, he would have guessed she merely needed more sleep. Fortunately for her, Gerald didn't usually call on anyone to answer a question who didn't have a hand up, so she needn't worry about being called on and caught in a bubble of romantic adulation. During the previous week, Steph came over to Nina's house on Wednesday evening, the 5th, with the plan of doing some studying and then watching a movie or something. But as it turned out, they didn't get any actual studying done. Nina was normally capable of thinking about things other than Professor Watkins, but when the topic of their fine arts course arose, so did her rush of love for the teacher. Their entire study session that night consisted of the following conversation. Alright, so on Monday we talked about how the different arts can influence both historical and pop culture, and yesterday we expanded on it and talked about how we can relate to it with stuff in our own lives. Oh, yesterday. Yeah. Didn't Jerry look awesome in that suit and tie he had on yesterday?
Yeah, he's a prince.
Now, come on, huh? What can we use to relate to what this is talking about? You know, today he had on his blue tie instead of his red one.
That's swell. Now, can we get on with it here?
Oh, I love you, Jerry.
Oh, jeez.
Nina, you want to pass this or not? Look, I'm trying to help you, but you gotta help me back. I am.
I bet you didn't even take any notes today, either.
Well, sure I did.
Yeah, right. Let me see your notebook.
But, Mrs. Nina Watkins? Oh, for God's sake, Seidler! What are you, 12? I can't help it, Steph. He's just so gorgeous, and so smart, and so amazing.
Yeah, he's also so married and so 50.
Forget about him, Nina. Snap out of it. You're a grown woman, for crying out loud. I don't care. I cannot stop thinking about him.
Listen to me, Nina Elizabeth Seidler. Again, the man is 30 years older than you, and he's got a wife.
There is no chance whatsoever that you will ever have this guy as anything more than a professor, Nina. Did you get any of that at all? Oh, tell it to my heart.
All right, fine, Taylor. I'll just study by myself.
Who's Taylor?
Today, on the 11th, as the class was coming up at 4, the last course of the day for both girls, Steph was trying to prep Nina before they got into the classroom. Now, you'd better take a look at my notes here, she said, trying to drill some information into Nina's head before Gerald came into the room and Nina undoubtedly let her heart flutter away once more. She had finally just about gotten Nina to focus on the course material and start committing a few things to memory before the professor strolled on in. Oh God, he's wearing his light lavender-colored shirt today, Nina again gushed to what felt to Steph like the millionth time. He is so adorable. Oh, would you knock it off with the goo-goo eyes already? Steph pleaded. He's half a century old. You are a fifth of a century old. There's a pretty significant difference. Oh, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but, he's also married! The words fell on hearing-impaired ears. The hour the class lasted progressed more or less like normal, and Nina settled in for another good long drink of the tall glass of water standing at the blackboard. Unbeknownst to Steph, contrary to her belief, Nina actually was paying attention to what Professor Watkins was saying. True, she did so with love-glazed eyes, a big infatuated grin on her face, and an inactive pen, and the less interesting lecture segments were a little quicker to go in one ear and approach the other, but overall, she was in the loop. Yes, my darling. Go on, Nina urged him in her mind. Talk to me about the beauty and the nuance, about the culture and the imitation of life. Talk to me forever. She could listen to him and watch him teach this class all day and night. Heck, she could listen to him talk about almost anything all day and night. When it was time to leave and head home, and everyone was getting their belongings together, Steph turned to Nina and asked, "So you want to do anything tonight? Want to go shopping?" Maybe tomorrow, Nina stammered, half gathering her things and half watching Gerald erase the day's material from the blackboard. But you know what? Here. She opened her purse, took Steph's hand, and subtly stuffed a bill of a particularly generous denomination into her palm. There. You go ahead. Have a good time. Nina? Steph objected, not wanting to take money from Nina no matter how rich she was or how jealous Steph was of her. Insisted, Nina replied. Go ahead, really. Buy yourself something nice for me. You're a good friend. You deserve it. Steph could see that Nina was absolutely heels over head in love, and she was going to spoil her because she was so happy. There wasn't any point in arguing. Well, all right, Steph departed. Sweet dreams. Nina waited until everyone else had gone. Everything now put away in her backpack and purse, she slipped the former over both her shoulders and the latter over her right, and walked up to where Professor Watkins was sitting, going through a few papers before he, too, left for the day. Eventually, he looked up and saw her. "Oh, hello," he said. "Something you wanted, Miss Seidler?" "Yes. You." Nina could feel her heart pounding. She quickly threw together the words she wanted in her mind. She began with a smile. "Oh, call me Nina, please." "Jerry, my love," she parenthetically added. She idly played with her backpack straps. "There was something I wanted to ask you, and,
Can it wait till tomorrow?" he asked. "I have a couple of things to take care of at home, so I'd better be running."
He stood up with his own portables.
"Oh, well, walk you out to your car, if you'd like," she offered.
"Well, I suppose that would be okay," he said, putting a smile on Nina's face.
They left together, and he locked the door. When they reached the building entrance, he held the door open for her, to which she responded with a, "Thank you, kind sir," and he led her to his lot spot. Nina knew there was only a limited amount of time before she had to bid him adieu for the day, and she wanted to say something to him, but she didn't have anything prepared. She didn't want to look at his hand. She knew what was on there, and she didn't need or want to remind herself he was married. She knew she couldn't ask him to go out with her, but she didn't want this short trip to his car to be completely devoid of any verbal exchange. "Come on, say something," she ordered herself.
"So what did you want to ask me?" he asked her first.
Oh, shoot, she thought. The truth was, wanting to ask him something was more of a bluff, more just a reason to spend a quick moment with him.
What did she want to ask him?
She wanted to ask him, "Will you run away with me and sweep me off my feet and into your arms and let me stay there forever and love me for the rest of my life and never ever let me go?" but that wasn't exactly an option. Anyway, several seconds were elapsing and they were nearing his vehicle. She knew she had to do something. She briefly stalled, then came up with an appropriate question.
Oh, yeah, she said, making believe she'd just forgotten her query momentarily. Did you say that's a take-home exam you gave us?
That's right, he replied, fishing out his keys and unlocking the car doors with its remote. It's take-home, open book. Mostly essay. It's due next Tuesday, he finished as he opened the door, tossed his briefcase into the passenger seat, and climbed in.
Thank you, Jerry, Nina said before her mind could filter it. Professor Watkins, I meant,
she quickly corrected herself. She thought it best to keep it formal, even though Gerald personally didn't care one way or the other. As far as he was concerned, college students were fellow adults and no fancy titles were necessary. She gave him a big smile and a friendly wave as he started up the car and shut the door, and in the next moment, her mind fluttered again and she blew him a kiss. Glancing in her direction, he briefly double-took when he thought he saw the blow kiss. Again, she put her emotions back in check and returned to her simple smile and wave. He was off. Once he got out of her line of sight, a slightly embarrassed Nina blushed and gave herself a pretend smack in the forehead for her tiny indiscretion. But she was still so lit up that she got to spend these precious 2 minutes with her beloved professor, she literally skipped all the way to her own car. Her entire ride home was spent with an irremovable grin covering her face, dreaming of all the things she wanted to do with Gerald. She knew deep down this might not be a great idea, as her chances of turning these daydreams into reality were slim, zero, and nothing, but she just could not help it. When her heart craved something, there was no stopping it. She pictured herself on what must have been 100 different dates with him. Her hands-down favorite was the symphony. More than anything, Nina had always wanted someone she really liked to take her to the symphony. The music was so majestic and moved her in a way she couldn't define. She had only to hope she could find someone who liked the symphony as much as she. On such a high from the short events of the afternoon, she drove home so excitedly fast, she almost got a speeding ticket.
February 11th, 9:52 p.m.
Honey, we're going to bed, Nina's mom announced to her as she and her dad headed to their bedroom. Good night.
Good night. Nina threw them a quick wave of the hand, looking at her books. She was pretending to study and do homework, but the truth was that she had finished it a couple of hours ago. She was eagerly waiting for her parents to go to bed. She had been thinking about this afternoon for the last 5 hours and decided there was something she was going to do tonight. She took the precaution of waiting a bit and tippy-toeing down to her parents' door to make sure they were asleep. She could hear light breathing bordering on the hint of a snore. She smiled excitedly to herself, silently closing the door and heading back upstairs. How handy that her parents happened to be especially heavy sleepers. She jaunted back up to the second floor and around the corner to the master upstairs bath. The master upstairs bathroom was larger than many bedrooms in America. Beholding the jewel in the bathroom crown, she excitedly slipped off her clothes and left them in a trail on the floor. She activated the hot koozie and set it on just the right level to turn herself on, but not to overwhelm herself or risk waking her parents. Briefly remembering them, even though she didn't want to, she locked the door. She felt slightly guilty about doing so, but they were already asleep, and even on the very slim chance they did come up, at least a particularly embarrassing situation would be averted. She took a couple of deep, comfortable breaths in anticipation as bubbling hot water piped in and began filling the cauldron at an enticing 104 degrees Fahrenheit. She could feel her body warming up already before she'd even stepped in. Her nipples woke to attention at the natural body heat. When the water reached its maximum point, Nina slowly ascended the marble steps leading to the entrance. She sat on the edge, dipped, and her toes broke the surface of the effervescent water. Her feet and then her legs submerged until her soles touched bottom. She closed her eyes and let out a soft initial moan, letting the sensation ride up the rest of her. She already knew she was going to like this. she felt apprehensive yet. She was, as Steph said, a fifth of a century old, and she had virtually never tried this before. The truth was, up until her fine arts course started, she hadn't really felt any genuine interest or desire to engage in this activity. As a result of such inexperience, she wasn't sure how well or effectively she could do this, and it wasn't exactly something on which she could ask for tips, guidance, or advice. She could have consulted a book, but at the same time she didn't wish to wait longer than necessary. After a month of bi-weekly meetings with her professor, admiring his almost godlike beauty, the 6-day absences between indeed making her heart grow fonder, she had allowed her crush to flourish and blossom into a growing magnetism bordering on the passionate. And after the recent week teetering on the edge of temptation, she decided she was ready to take this chance. She wasn't certain if she should, exactly, but the more she thought about it, the greater became the allure of the impetuousness. Nina did feel a little sheepish, even though she was the only one here. It went without saying that she wanted to do this well, even though she wasn't every bit sure what she was doing. She tended to be something of a perfectionist in and with many things in her life, and oftentimes she herself was her biggest critic. So while she was excited about this, she hoped she could accomplish it with at least relative competence. Well, she thought, submerging herself into the tub up to the chin. If nothing else, she was getting a wonderful, soothing liquid massage from the lovely bubbles. It was true, no matter what, she wouldn't have trouble getting a good night's sleep tonight. She told herself to stop thinking about it so much and just go ahead. She parted her legs and slid herself forward to easier access her key areas, letting her head rest against the back wall. She closed her eyes, took a breath, touched herself between the legs, and summoned to mind an image of her professor in one of his striking three pieces. "He's such a handsome dresser," she thought. She also supposed she could picture him nude, but thought this might be a little much for her right this second. She could work up to that. She started out with a simple picture of him in her mind's eye, and gently rubbed her furry vagina. "Should I sit on one of the jets?" she wondered. "No, honey," her vagina answered. "Do you have any idea what that'll do to us? That'll drive us too crazy. We don't want that." At least she was familiar with her own anatomy, even if she had never attempted to masturbate before. She briefly wondered how long this would take, but she was perceptive enough to realize if she concentrated on that, she wouldn't be able to enjoy this as much. "Forget the time," her vagina advised. "Just focus on me. Just focus on little Nina. And of course on Jerry." Oh, indeed. Focusing on Jerry was a delightful distraction from time or anything else. She seemed to be receiving another message from her little companion under the water. "Don't worry," she communicated up to her. "Even if we don't figure it out this time, we'll always have another chance. And there's always the bookstore. And the internet." Finally, she brought her other hand to task as well. Returning to her mental picture of Gerald, she opened her labia and gave herself a slow, tender first stroke on the inside, bottom to top, which felt pretty nice. She repeated the action a few times, wondering if she should be touching her clit just yet. She innocuously tickled it, just to find out. "Ooh!" said little Nina, signaling her that it wasn't quite time for that at this moment. "Copied," she thought, gliding back down to her vagina and resuming stroking. Taking her time, each stroke gradually felt just a little nicer than the last, especially as she imagined she was sitting in the classroom, alone with Professor Watkins, essentially being privately tutored by him. After a few more self-fondlings, she got the sense that something she was doing was working, as she let her head tilt further back against the tile wall and gave off a soft, quiet moan. More minutes passed as her sensations grew, and her mind decided to do something her vagina liked very much. It stepped outside reality and began fantasizing. Taking a turn for the naughty, She imagined that she had neglected to do her homework, or misbehaved in class, or any number of similar offenses that might cause her teacher to detain her after school for a bit of discipline, she thought, and the word made her pussy tingle. And again, it clearly just made sense that she be the only one in detention, once more alone with her love. Having to be taught a different type of lesson aroused her like mad. "Oh, I like that," her pussy said to her mind. "More, more." Now becoming more stimulated, she tried slipping one or two of her petite digits a little way inside herself to see what would happen. Little Nina rewarded her with a small flush of warm pleasure all throughout as she fingered the edge of her interior. "Now bring up that mental shot of Jerry again," said her vagina. Obeying, she focused him in her mind's eye, had him hold still in about a dozen different poses, and shot off a whole roll of mental photos of him. And back to the fantasy. She imagined her professor making her rise from the desk and stand at the front of the room. And... Now what? She didn't know what happened in detention. She had never been there. But she reminded herself that this was her fantasy and anything could happen here that she wanted. Then her mind made a spontaneous leap. She thought, dare I dream up something really wild? Dare I go kinky here? Shutting the rest of the world off outside the classroom door, she eased into an experimental sexual scenario. She took it years back in time to an age when discipline could be administered in other ways, and imagined he... Oh my gosh, she mentally repeated to little Nina. Are you sure this isn't too out there just for our first time doing this? Just go with me on it, her beaming pussy insisted. I've got an instinct about this. Well, okay. She imagined that he made her flip up her dress and slide her panties down to her ankles and bend face down over his desk. Then she imagined, though she wasn't looking at him in her little daydream, that he picked up the yardstick that was sitting on the blackboard slate, returned to her bent over body, and delivered her bare ass a harsh, scolding... Ooh, yes! Little Nina cried up to her. That was wonderful! Another one! Okay. Oh, God, yes! Her now pulsating pussy rejoiced. More, more, keep 'em coming! Big Nina found herself groaning in ecstasy. She was aggressively rubbing and burrowing her head against the wall with as much push as an affectionate cat. She was suddenly discovering just how submissive she wanted to be to her professor. It was a huge turn-on for her, imagining herself bent over like this, face down on the desk, neither hands nor legs allowed to move, enduring her well-deserved castigation, pretending she didn't like it, but really adoring it. She presumed this fantasy of hers was unoriginal. In fact, she might even go so far as to call it a classic, but the fact remained it was lighting her up immensely. She didn't allow its unoriginality to deter her. Millions of people had uttered these words before, but she took such delight nonetheless, huskily whispering, "Oh, yes. Ouch! I'm a bad girl, Professor. I've been very, very... Ouch! Bad. I deserve to be reprimanded for it. Put me in my place, lovely sir. Punish me, please. I need to learn... Ouch! My lesson." Her pussy was loving how into this her randy mind was getting. And the happier her pussy became, the more intense so grew the radiating waves of elation she sent undulating up and down and through the rest of her owner's body. Yet Nina soon actually found her horny self on the horns of a dilemma. As smoking hot as this detention spanking scenario proved to be, the curious part of her couldn't help wondering if concocting up another, different fantasy could prove even hotter, and if she should switch gears to, say, a wonderful tableau of her professor in the buff, a vision of his erect cock standing firm and hard for her. but her vagina instinctively knew better.
"No, no, Nina," said little Nina. "Stick with the detention. Trust my judgment. I was right before. Believe me, I'm darn curious about his naked manliness, too, but we'll do that another time. I'm in charge right now, and I want Jerry to keep spanking us."
"Yes, ma'am," thought Nina. She returned to the disciplinary fantasy scene, and her pussy took the liberty of intensifying the force of the spanks. Her eyes fluttered as she emitted another lust-loaded groan. Even with her ass mostly stationary on the porcelain, she could almost feel the ruler smacking her across the cheeks, leaving deliciously painful red marks on her young virgin girl flesh. The passion engulfing her body only grew and grew, built and built. Stronger and stronger, hotter and hotter. She writhed against the hot koozie, letting out whines of longing desire, thrusting her fingers repeatedly in and out of herself, curling them upwards, trying to find and reach her G-spot. The action washing over her was becoming hotter than the bubbling water. She was starting to sweat, so overwhelmed she couldn't concentrate on the fantasy. But her vagina took over for her. "It's all right. I've got it from here, Nina. You just keep it up, babe. Keep chilling. Don't even think about stopping now." "Yes, ma'am," she thought. Her arm and wrist were starting to throb, but her pussy had all the control over her now. Roughly 30 seconds later, little Nina sent her up another message. "Clit is erect. Ready for activation. Repeat. Clit is ready. Circular motion around. Do not rub directly on top. Repeat. Do not rub directly on top of clit." Keeping little Nina's lips separated with her other fingers, she extended her left middle downwards to circumnavigate her clit. It took a sec for the stimulus to reach her brain, but when her clit came to glowing life, Nina couldn't express her exhilaration in words.
"Oh!"
she wailed, trying to contain herself but able to tell she couldn't stand it much longer.
"Good girl," her pussy urged her, its motor revving towards irrevocable heaven. Identical cries of indescribable joy followed. She didn't know it, but she was 10 seconds away from the first major orgasmic event of her entire life. Nina Seidler indeed felt the climactic fuse imminently set off beneath her. She couldn't be completely positive what exactly would happen, but she had a pretty good idea of how it would feel. Although she could never have imagined anything feeling like this.
"We are about to come, babe," her pussy announced to her. "We're about to come!"
Finally, it happened. The fuse went off, and she felt as if her soul were blasted out of the stratosphere. She shrieked her lungs out as the passion-inflated balloon inside her blew open, propelling thousands of sparks of unbridled ecstasy throughout her entire body.
"Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!"
she repeated deliriously, feeling her soul floating back down to earth, light as a feather. An indeterminable modicum of time elapsed as her introductory orgasm ran its course. She wasn't sure when exactly she should stop stroking until little Nina eventually told her,
"Okay, okay, that's enough."
Nina unhanded herself and let her arms fall lifeless at her sides, joining the rest of her. She dropped dizzily against the wall, let her eyelids fall like unpropped windows, and heaved out a dozen audible sighing breaths.
"Holy smoke. I love you, Nina."
Her vagina conveyed up to her.
"And I love Jerry. And I love me. And I love you. And I love us."
"Took the words right out of my mind," she responded, still radiating her brilliant afterglow.
For half a second, she thought about asking little Nina if she could have another one, but her pussy said,
"Later, babe. Don't be greedy. Too much chocolate gives you a tummy ache, and you just had a giant Hershey bar. Drain the water and put us to bed."
February 12th, 4:53 p.m. An extra enthusiastic bounce in her step today. Nina couldn't stop smiling all day, especially from 4 to 5. With no staff in class accompanying her today, trying to bring her back to her senses and make her forget all these silly feelings about her professor, she was unabashedly uninhibited with her desirous love. Deep down, a small part of her knew it wasn't advisable, but she just ignored it. She was in love, it was undeniable, and her heart wouldn't let any little nagging voice make her feel otherwise. When class let out, and she had her test to take home and complete between now and next Tuesday, she waited until just before Gerald was ready to leave again, and repeated the gesture she'd made 24 hours before.
"Hi, Professor," she said, trying to control her breathing. This might sound a little funny, but do you mind if I walk you out to your car again?"
He looked at her a moment. "Well, if you like," he said. "Was there something else you wanted to talk about?"
Not particularly," she said.
"Well, actually, yeah, you might say, but unfortunately I have to at least try like crazy to keep it to myself."
"It's just, well, it's more enjoyable to walk with a nice gentleman than by myself," she explained, proud of her restraint from jumping over his desk, throwing her arms around him, and covering him with lip prints.
"All right, sure," shrugged Gerald. They once more adjourned to his car. On the way out, Nina debated with herself whether or not she should link her arm in his. It probably wouldn't have been too forward, but given their relationship, it didn't seem completely appropriate either. She held off on that for now and decided again that being in his solitary company sufficed. 15 feet out into the lot, Nina looked around.
"Where's your car, sweetie, sir?" she asked.
"Oh, mine's in the shop today," he said. Before either of them could say anything more, Nina heard a car door open and returned her eyes to the direction in which they were walking to see... Oh my gosh. A woman stepping out of a different car to greet her professor. A woman who couldn't have been more than 30 years old.
Jerry, that's your daughter, right? That has to be your daughter, right? Your married daughter? Please tell me that's your daughter."
When she got out of the car, she and Gerald embraced.
"Hi, baby,"
she greeted him. They proceeded, to Nina's utter horror, to kiss. A long, passionate one, on the lips, arms around each other. Suddenly, Nina didn't feel so good. Her mind pitifully grabbed at one last disappearing morsel of hope.
"Oh, God, that's not your daughter, is it?"
When they concluded the kiss, Nina, who had thrown her hands over her eyes, heard the woman ask,
"Who's this, Jer?"
Nina quickly realized she was being referred to and removed her hands from her face, though the last thing she wanted to do was look at this person. Gerald, of course, completely oblivious to Nina's feelings about him, said matter-of-factly,
"Oh, honey, this is a student of mine, Nina Seidler. She's in one of my fine arts classes. Nina, I'd like you to meet my wife, Wendy."
Oh, God, no.
When she heard that awful four-letter W word, Nina almost threw up in her mouth. She knew this woman existed, supposedly, or at least she thought she knew. Steph had certainly mentioned it to her enough times, but she guessed she had just always been in denial of it. Being enamored of her professor had clouded her mind of his wife's existence, and yet here she stood, 5 feet in front of her, barely 10 years older than Nina. How humiliating was that? Nina felt like she had been kicked in the throat. And as if all that wasn't bad enough, just to add insult to injury, his wife was beautiful. Poor Nina felt like Alanis Morissette. Wendy held out her hand to her.
"Hi! Nice to meet you, Lil Gal,"
she said. "Lil Gal? I'll give you Lil Gal, you..." Nina's first impulse was to rip Wendy's arm off of her and bludgeon her to death with it, but clearly, for a dozen different reasons, she couldn't do that. Her good manners compelled her to be cordial and shake her hand, stifling the revulsion invading her mind. So she did. As much as she hated to, she shook the woman's hand. Oh, even her hand feels all soft and warm and cushy. She cringed in disgust. You'll have to forgive me, lady. Nothing personal. It's just that I kinda, well, hate your freaking guts and would like to murder you, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Nina forced out, pushing her facial muscles into as much of a smile as she could manage.
Nice to meet you, too.
Well, thanks again for walking me out, Nina, said Gerald. We've got to get going now. We're going to the symphony tonight. Something shattered.
Oh, God, please tell me you did not just say that,
thought Nina, realizing just what that something was, feeling it crushed to a billion tiny shards. Her eyes welled up. All his idea, Wendy chuckled. Trust me, he loves that kind of thing. To me, though, it's a yawner. Real snooze and a half. Suddenly, her blood boiled. I'm going to murder her. I am. Somebody stop me. I am going to shoot her in her rotten little heart. If I can find it.
Sounds like fun,
Nina replied, trying to sound like her world wasn't crashing apart around her.
Have a good time.
Nice to meet you, young lady,
Wendy repeated to her. Young lady. Look who's talking, bitch, Nina thought, forcing her mind to censor the harsh B-word. She gave them a little wave as the wife took him away from her and they got in the car. Just when she believed it wasn't possible to feel any worse, she thought she heard Wendy giggle to Gerald.
You know, hon, I think that cute little girl likes you.
Oh, ho, ho. She clenched her fists, strangling her backpack straps. You better hope you never meet me alone, lady. Her energy gave out. She didn't have the drive to be angry anymore. This time she didn't watch the car drive off. She sadly retired to her own car, unlocked the driver door, slung the backpack off and started to get in, but couldn't. She turned her back to the car, leaned against it, let her body slide down until she was sitting on the pavement, dropped her face in her hands, and out it all came. The lot had almost entirely been vacated except for Nina. She and her car sat isolated in the middle of 100 empty parking spaces. Should any non-deaf person go anywhere near the parking lot a few minutes after all of this had happened, they'd hear the faint echo of Nina Elizabeth Seidler sitting on the ground, inconsolably sobbing. All of a sudden, it wasn't so hard to hear Steph's warnings and discouragings to her.
Oh, Nina, you stupid girl,
she thought, kicking herself while she was down.
You knew he was married. Why would you open yourself up to such heartache like that?
Unfortunately, she knew the answer was that it wasn't a decision she made with her head, but with her heart. And with such a shortage of romantic companionship or experience, her heart remained naive and innocent and easily led. Well, next time she thought she was in love with someone, she'd catch herself and think long and hard about it first before letting her heart take over.
Oh, God,
she wept in heartbroken despair.
Jerry, I wish you could just be mine.
After about 10 minutes of lacrimal therapy, once her eyes were starting to redden and puff up, she opened them to give them a soothing rub and saw something she hadn't before. To her left, out of the corner of her eye, she caught sight of a pair of faded, worn old sneakers. She curiously eyed the sneakers, moving up from them to a pair of legs in torn nylons, a frayed bluish-purple dress,
and finally all the way up to see a woman standing beside her, also leaning against her car, a beat-up-looking purse over her own shoulder, snapping and popping gum in her mouth and shining up her nails with a file. When she saw Nina had noticed her, the other woman nodded down at her flatly and said, in a low, monotone voice,
"All right, sis, let's do this and get it over with, what do you say?"
Nina had no idea who this was or what she was talking about. She looked around her for another clue, but seeing no one and nothing else, she returned her teary, blinking eyes to this shabbily dressed lady and sniffled,
"I'm sorry?"
The woman just concentrated on her nails.
"That's right. Come on, I ain't got all day here. Let's rock and roll."
Nina gazed up at her, very bewildered, still not standing just yet.
"I reiterate, say what now?" she asked.
The lady shifted her eyes from her nails and looked at Nina for the first time.
"You want me to spell it out for you, kid?"
Nina waited a second, then nodded.
"That'd be good."
"Your call. Name's Lindsay."
The woman's tone was fantastically disinterested.
"I'm here to make all your dreams come true."
Nina's eyebrows raised and arched.
"Uh-huh," she said.
"Yes, well, I certainly appreciate that, but,
Lindsay went right back to her nails, focusing on a particularly troublesome one.
"I go wherever the work is, Chickpea. You wished, I showed up. But hey, you don't want me around? No skin off my nose."
This short elaboration only befuddled Nina further. She let a few more seconds pass, then queried,
"Who are you?"
Her especially bothersome fingernail proved so irritating, Lindsay just gnawed it right off.
"Who the hell you think?"
she replied mid-gnaw. She chewed it all the way off, spit it out in the other direction, and turned back to Nina, proceeding filing where she left off.
"I'm your fairy godmother, kiddo."
An interesting diversion. Nina stood, momentarily forgetting about her broken heart, and chortled at this new development.
"Really? That's hilarious."
Lindsay nodded, having heard every reaction to it in the book.
"Laugh riot."
Nina watched her curiously as she blew a bubble and let it pop back into her mouth.
Right, she replied. "And I suppose next you're going to tell me I get 3 wishes.
Lindsay shrugged lackadaisically.
"Three? 300? 3 million? How many you want?"
Nina chuckled in amusement.
"You're really funny," she commented.
She took one of Lindsay's occupied hands and gave it a pat.
"Well, nice to meet you, Miss, Lindsay, whichever. Listen, you want to take a little ride? We could go see my mom and dad's friend, Dr. Reynolds. He's a psychiatrist."
Lindsay nodded knowingly and sardonically.
"Save it, Nina. I've heard it all."
Her face turned serious again and she let go of Lindsay's arm.
How'd you know my name? Do we know each other?"
Lindsay reached into her purse and retrieved a bent and creased folder.
"Got it all right here," she read. "Nina Elizabeth Seidler, born August 2nd, 1993, unemployed, living with folks, enrolled in Denmore Academy." She skipped some of the unimportant details. "Yada yada yada, blah 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 blah. Here we go. In love with professor, just met professor's wife, heartbroken, still wants him."
She looked back up at Nina.
"Help her."
Nina suddenly felt a little frightened and creeped out.
Are you stalking me?" she asked. "Is someone else?"
For the first time, Lindsay seemed to show some actual emotion towards her. As this was a totally normal human reaction, she looked into Nina's eyes and assured her,
"No. I know how impossible this is to believe, and I know I seem like a real whack job right now, but even if you do not yet believe I'm your actual fairy godmother, believe this. You're in no danger.
Nina stared at her in a mix of bewilderment, embarrassment, and amazement.
Where'd that come from, then?
She inquired, indicating the folder with her personal info inside.
Lindsay waved the nail file at her.
Same place the wands came from, baby doll.
Well, maybe this woman wasn't a total Looney Tune, but...
Nina was still skeptical.
Okay,
she said.
Prove it. If you're really my...
She couldn't believe she was saying these words.
Fairy godmother... I'm going to need some solid, concrete, scientific proof.
Lindsay gave her a half-hearted shrug. Make a wish. Nina stared at her, baffled.
That's all I've got to do? Just say anything I want?
Go for it. Be a wild girl. Name it. It's yours.
Nina nodded with an affable chuckle.
Right. So if I just said something off the top of my head, like, oh, I don't know, I wish there was $100 in my jacket pocket.
Lindsay gave her a light tap on the head with her wand.
Done.
Nina just stared at her briefly.
Mm-hmm,
she uttered.
She reached into her pocket, felt something made of paper that wasn't there before, and her facial expression changed dramatically. She removed it, unfolded it, and sure enough, a crisp new Franklin stared her right in the face. As soon as it registered, she audibly yelped and dropped it on the ground. She turned back to Lindsay, eyes now wide open and mouth agape. This being, of course, nothing out of the ordinary for Lindsay, she simply maintained her apathetic attitude, polishing up her nails. Nina was now understandably dumbfounded. Her bamboozled mind refused to process any more words.
Lindsay didn't answer.
Nina gazed at the $100 on the ground. She recovered her faculties.
All right. Okay, she said. If you can do that, how about this? Just for the heck of it, I... wish my friend Steph would call me right now and tell me she won the lottery.
Lindsay repeated the gesture, this time tapping her wand on Nina's purse, and inside it, her phone rang. Now starting to become a little excited, albeit also freaked out, Nina frantically dug into her purse to find the phone, grabbed it, checked the display, and... That was Steph, all right.
She answered in a meek voice.
Steph? Hi. What?
Nina, you are not gonna believe this.
Steph's voice crackled through.
You know that $100 you gave me yesterday? Well, I don't know what happened to it. It just seemed to disappear. But never mind that. I was just in the store and... Don't ask me why. Something inside me made me buy a lottery ticket. And I scratched off the numbers and it hit! I won $1,000,000!
Nina screamed and dropped the phone on the ground right along with the $100. Now practically in shock, she backed up a few steps away from her fairy godmother.
Lindsay, Natch, couldn't care less. Interesting news? Lindsay asked her in her regular monotone.
My God,
Nina whispered in disbelief.
How did you... Oh my God, you really are my...
She was too flipped to finish the sentence. She put her hand to the side of her face and gave her head a shake.
I don't believe it. This is too wild.
Something occurred to her.
But wait a sec. If this is real, and you're actually my fairy godmother, where have you been all these years? How come you never showed up until just now?
You never seriously wished for anything until just now.
Her heart started pounding. She looked at Lindsay.
How,
How many more wishes do I get?
She whispered uncertainly. Lindsay tossed off another indifferent shrug. How many you want?
Nina thought. Her mind was racing, but she made herself stay under control. She was definitely familiar with the concept of being careful what you wish for. She knew there was a distinct possibility that if she wished for something, and this apparently real fairy godmother of hers could grant it for her, the details could be twisted around into something she really didn't want at all. She would have to choose the wording very carefully.
Okay, then, if this is actually for real, first, I wish that $100 was back wherever it came from.
Lindsay gave her a quarter-hearted nod. You're the boss. She wrist-snapped the wand towards the ground, bringing about a light breeze, and the $100 bill was swept off the ground into the air and floated down, like a feather, until it slipped back into Nina's purse.
Oh, right.
She had forgotten she gave this to Steph 24 hours ago.
You've gotta be kidding me,
whispered Nina.
This truly was for real, wasn't it? Well, then,
There was only a single one thing she really wanted, but how to go about phrasing it?
Can you come home with me, Lindsay?
February 12th, 6:11 p.m. It had just started to get dark by the time Nina got to her lovely home. Her parents might have been, well, loaded, and they kept a beautiful, generously sized two-story domicile, three if the attic counted, but they were modest enough not to live in a mansion. She sprinted up the stairs straight to her room, threw her backpack on the bed, and booted her computer. Once the desktop came up, she opened a document and started typing up her wish. And then a scary thought popped into her head.
Lindsay?
She asked, looking around.
Behind you, kid, came her voice, startling Nina.
She whipped her head around to see her fairy godmother there with her.
Question, said Nina. Does the wish still count if I just type it up? 'Cause I don't want it to, you know, take effect before I'm totally done with it.
Only once I tap you with the wand. But you're the boss, I won't tap you till you're sure you're ready.
Oh, good. Nina did some more editing. Another moment later, she heard footsteps approaching. Realizing someone was coming to her room, she let out a small gasp and quickly minimized the document. It was her mother, Sally. She gave her a little knock on the open door.
Hi, honey,
she smiled.
Oh, hi, Mom. Steph just called me a little earlier to tell me the amazing news. That's incredible about her winning the lottery, isn't it? I didn't know she even played it,
her mom said. Nina couldn't think of much with which to reply except, yep, pretty amazing. She remembered her fairy godmother was standing behind her and added,
oh yeah, Mom, this is my, friend, Lindsay.
Sally turned confused. She looked all around the room.
Where, hun?
At this point, Nina's face would have turned equally confused had Lindsay not said right away,
oh, yeah, this might be a good time to tell you this, kiddo. She can't see me.
Before she could stop herself, Nina whirled back around on her and said, what? She heard her mother's voice behind her again.
I said, where, Nina? Where's your friend?
Whoops.
Thinking on her feet, Nina came up with the best explanation she could. She took a quick bound over to her bed and picked up a floppy-eared stuffed animal.
Right here! Yeah, I've named her Lindsay.
How flattering, Lindsay smirked.
Sally replied with a blank stare.
Okay, she finally said.
Well, I just wanted to tell you that Daddy's making some popcorn along with dinner. We're going to watch a movie a little later. If you want to come watch it, we'll let you know when it's time.
Oh, cool, said Nina, glad to move on from the Lindsay business. Yeah, that sounds good.
Sally left her alone. Nina let out a whew, and returned to her computer and documented wish draft. She did just a little more tweaking, then... There! I finished it! She took a breath, rolled the chair back from the monitor, and read. Okay, my multiple part wish. I hope this works. I wish Jerry Watkins was not my professor anymore, and that he was my age, and that we were... She was unsure about this last part, so she phrased it this way. Both single and liked each other, and were really, really, really good friends. She exhaled. Period.
You sure? Lindsay asked.
Nina took a sec to think about it. As she reread it, it seemed pretty selfish, but then when she thought about this afternoon and her broken heart crushed like glass into a trillion grains of sand, it was more difficult to care. And besides, she reasoned, if this worked, it didn't seem as though she were breaking up a family or anything. It seemed that if he were 30 years younger, he wasn't married to Wendy and wouldn't ever have been. And as long as she had Lindsay with her, she figured she could always wish things back to normal. Oh, she said. She repeated the wish, then added, and that I still had my fairy godmother there with me. Period.
Yeah, well, that's a given. Don't worry about that, Lindsay assured her. Now again, you sure?
Nina sat back, closed her eyes, took another breath, and said, yes.
All right, you got it. Lindsay waved the wand over Nina's head and tapped her. The next thing Nina knew, everything went black.
February 13th, 8:52 a.m.
Oh, Nina moaned, getting herself up. My back.
She got to her feet.
Why was I sleeping on the floor?
She was still too half asleep to be very concerned. She made her way out into the hall, rubbing her eyes. Looking only straight ahead, Nina saw someone come out of the kitchen. It was a 17-year-old girl.
Oh, hi, said Nina, surprised to see someone here so early. I didn't know we had company. I'm Nina.
Hi, the girl said, surprised and bemused to see this young woman. I'm Sally. I, like, live here.
Sally? What in the...
Nina focused her eyes and looked her closer in the face. Her own face went into shock.
Mom?
She gasped into a squeal.
Mom, what happened to you?
Excuse me? The girl replied, taken aback.
Mom? Whoa, chill, dudette. You're, like, kind of totally going freak city on me here. Mom, what is going on here? And why are you talking like that?
The girl turned around and called back to the kitchen.
Mom, Dad, there's, like, a very weird stranger in the house. Oh my God, Mom, what
Nina started to say.
Stranger? Hey, I'm not a stranger, this is my...
She stopped again as the girl's two middle-aged parents emerged from the kitchen.
She thinks I'm, like, her mom or something, said the worried and alarmed 17-year-old Sally. Make her go away.
Nina gasped again, recognizing the parents.
Grandma! Grandpa! You're so young!
The parents, now also startled, looked at each other.
Miss, said Sally's dad, may we ask who you are exactly?
She was dumbstruck.
I'm Nina, she said. Nina Elizabeth Seidler, don't you recognize...
She stopped. Something clicked.
Oh my gosh. You're the Mortons, aren't you?
Morton was Nina's mom Sally's maiden name. Nina suddenly got a startling clue what was going on.
Yes, we are, said Sally's mom. But I'm afraid we don't know you.
Like, how do you know us? Sally wanted to know. Nina's heart was starting to pound. She felt a panic attack coming down on her.
Can I ask you guys a really weird question? She said. What year is it?
The Mortons were bewildered beyond belief, but so was Nina. It's 1984, young lady, said Nina's granddad, this to them being obvious information and indeed a really weird question. Has been since last month. Monday, February the 13th, 1984. This time last year, it was 1983. Nina threw her hands over her open mouth. Another high-pitched squeal emitted from deep inside of her. So it was true. Unreal, she thought automatically.
Oh, dear God!
Nina peeped.
No wonder they didn't recognize her. She wasn't alive yet! Oh, God, I'm sorry, she said. I'm so sorry,
She started down the stairs to the door.
I'd explain, but you'd never believe me. I'm sorry, I've got to go.
Leaving the befuddled Mortons upstairs in the dining room / kitchen, a panicked Nina scrambled down to the front door and fled outside. It was still pretty dim out. Nina turned around to look at the house and double-took with wide eyes at what she saw. Even in the dark, it looked brand new. It looked newer than she had ever seen it, which of course it was. The paint wasn't chipped, the shutters were in excellent condition, the lawn was beautiful. It looked like it was built yesterday. Nina wanted to cry. It was her own house, and she couldn't go in. And it was cold out here. She didn't have her jacket. She only had the clothes she had fallen asleep in the previous night. She looked around, and again her mouth dropped open. She could swear this was not her neighborhood. It looked so not like hers. There were trees everywhere. No leaves, but she could still tell how vastly different everything was here, or rather, now. In her 2014 neighborhood, there was barely a tree left in every fifth yard. She rubbed her arms, trying to warm up.
Lindsay? She called.
Right behind you, kiddo. She turned to see her fairy godmother leaning up against one of the numerous trees. Nina blew out an angry breath, which she could see dissipating into the air. She marched up to her.
May I have a word with you?
She shouted through her clenched, chattering teeth. Lindsay shrugged, still wearing only her own dress as well, the coldness not affecting her at all. It's up to you.
Oh, is it now? Nina asked her demandingly. What did you do? I didn't want you to send me back in time. That's not what I meant. For crying out loud, do I look like Michael J. Fox to you?
I command to differ. I wish that Jerry Watkins was not my professor anymore and that he was my age. Well, you got it, baby. He's your age, 30 years younger. She blew on her nails and cracked her knuckles. Besides, you can't make that comparison yet. Michael J. Fox isn't even going to go back in time himself until a year from now. Nina couldn't believe this.
Yeah, I wanted Jerry 30 years younger. Jerry, not everybody else, too. Not the entire world. My family has no idea who I am. They think I'm crazy, and I won't even be born for another 9 years.
She stamped the ground.
Oh, I knew it! I knew you'd find some way to screw this up from me! Thank you a billion, fairy god monster!
Lindsay wasn't fazed. Fine. That's the way you want it. Have fun on your own. She sauntered around to the other side of the tree and was gone. Once she realized Lindsay'd vanished, Nina panicked.
Oh, no, please, I'm sorry, Lindsay, I didn't mean it. Lindsay, please come back. I'm sorry, Lindsay, come back,
she called out into the open air. Well, if you insist. Again, Nina spun around to see Lindsay leaning up against a different tree.
Oh, good.
Nina breathed a visible sigh of relief.
I'm sorry, Lindsay. I didn't mean that. You're not a monster. Can we just go back to 2014, please?
Well, that's your call, said Lindsay. Although, would it not be a shame to just pass up the whole reason we came now? She produced something from her purse and showed it to Nina. Your young prof here? Nina looked. It was indeed a picture of Jerry at the age of 20. Nina saw it and instantly forgot how cold she was. The sight was surreal. Nina had only seen him at 50. She couldn't have guessed she would ever find a 20-year-old, a man her own age, this limitlessly beautiful. She felt her heart melt. And, Lindsay went on. Need I remind you, as per the stipulations of your wish, he's the one person who knows you in 1984, and he's your very good friend. Nina looked back up at her. She remembered now. In all the confusion with her family in the house, she'd completely forgotten. She looked back at the picture again. Her face softened and her mind went weak with the familiar bittersweet feelings of longing and adoration.
Oh, Jerry,
she whispered with sweet devotion as the cold wind whipped her hair and face. Lindsay started to put it away. But if you really want to go back to 2014 right now... She raised the wand over Nina's head. Nina glanced up in alarm once more.
Wait!
She said, halting Lindsay's arm. February 13th, 10:27 a.m. The sun having risen high enough around the sparse arrangement of clouds, this blustery Monday was in full bloom and full daylight. Nina had wisely asked Lindsay for a duplicate of a jacket and a car just so she didn't freeze. Lindsay was driving her to Jerry's house, and Nina was playing with the radio, trying to find something to listen to. Had she been paying attention to the scenery, she would, of course, have also noticed other major differences in the neighborhoods, stores, and shopping centers. It's too bad this car doesn't have a CD player, she said. Hardly anybody even knows what CDs are yet, silly, Lindsay replied. CD players right now cost $1,000.
Are you kidding? Just for a CD player? That's insane!
And all these songs sound so weird, Nina went on. I don't know any of them. I wish I could hear something by Aubrey O'Day. That would be quite a feat, seeing as how she was literally born 2 days ago. Nina found a station playing music. A song by The Police was just starting. Nina quickly changed the station. This time she heard a brand new song by Van Halen. She hastily changed it again. ABBA.
Oh, for goodness sake! Nina exclaimed, changing it again. Are you kidding me?
Lindsay smirked sneakily. It was her. She was amusing herself by messing with Nina, making the radio play all these funny songs. The last song she found was Rock Piles. Nina turned off the radio. I don't want to listen to any music right now, she decided. Finally, they entered a suburban neighborhood. Lindsay pulled over onto the side, parked, and led Nina up to the house. They stood on the even-numbered 1100-block sidewalk of Zanzibar Street, three houses down from the intersection.
This is it?
Asked Nina. 1106, this is the one, Lindsay confirmed.
Well, what are we waiting for, then?
Was Nina's next question. The question was intended to be rhetorical, but Lindsay answered it. We're waiting for him to get home from work.
Home from work?
Yeah, he's a TA at Denmore. Doesn't have his degree yet.
Oh. Well, when will he get home?
In about 7 hours.
Seven?
for crying out loud, Lindsay!
Hey, I didn't make up a schedule.
Well, can we just kind of speed things up here?
As you wish. Lindsay tapped her.
February 13th, 5:29 p.m. The sky promptly turned semi-dark as the sun shifted position and a vehicle appeared in the driveway Nina hadn't seen before.
Thank you,
said Nina. She started to prance up to the door.
Whoa, hang on, Cinderella, said Lindsay.
She reached into her purse and produced Nina a hairbrush and a lint roller.
No offense, babe, but you look like hell.
Nina appreciatively thanked her again and started performing the necessary maintenance on her hair and her dress. When she was finished, Lindsay tapped her on the nose with the wand, and her makeup also cleared up.
Thanks, Lindsay, she said.
She started up the driveway again, then stopped and turned back around again.
Oh, Lindsay!
Yes, ma'am?
It is still the 13th, right?
Right.
Nina whispered something in her ear. Lindsay nodded, gave her another wand tap, and into Nina's hand, out of thin air, materialized a bouquet of a dozen roses.
Oh, they're beautiful, said Nina. He's gonna love them.
All right, kiddo, have fun, Lindsay said, heading off, giving Nina the car keys. Hope you get lucky. Just don't traumatize the guy.
Nina finally trotted all the way up the driveway and the steps and rapped on the door. She heard the door click open before her and caught her breath as her heartbeat sped up again. When Jerry opened the door and saw Nina outside, and she him, she gave him a huge friendly smile and an equally fond wave. He still had on his tie from work. His hair was longer and stylishly gelled, and there was no gray whatsoever, but she didn't care.
Oh gosh, she thought, he's so young. And he's even more handsome and gorgeous in person.
He stared at her straight-faced a moment, then asked,
Yo, can I, help you, miss?
Nina's smile evaporated and her face turned to alarm again. He waited another second, then grinned at her.
I'm kidding! I'm kidding!
A flourish of relief washed over Nina and she laughed. He held the door open for her.
Come on in, Nina.
Thank goodness, Nina thought. Finally, someone knows me. Her tummy was doing backflips, but now they were happy backflips.
These are for you,
she announced. Jerry brought her a vase, and she deposited the roses.
Happy early Valentine's Day,
said Nina, her eyes welling up with love.
Thanks, I'm so psyched you came over. What a cool surprise, said Jerry.
He led her to the couch in front of his TV. He made sure the couch cushion was an ideal position and fluffed up a pillow to place beside it.
One cushion for you, my lady. No waiting.
Nina melted. It was like the Sophie equivalent of pulling out her chair for her.
Why, thank you, kind sir, she said, almost crying.
He turned ahead to the kitchen.
Go ahead, sit down. I'm just about to watch The Man with Two Brains.
The what with two what?
It's a Steve Martin movie. Jerry called to her as he came back with a bag of chips. It's one of my favorites. Totally hilarious.
Oh, I love Steve Martin, said Nina. I loved him in Cheaper by the Dozen.
Cheaper by the Dozen? Jerry chuckled as he returned with the chips. He's a little too young for that. He was only 4 years old when that came out.
Well, Nina started to utter. Then she remembered.
Oh, yeah.
He's got another one in the theaters right now. It's called The Lonely Guy. It's supposed to be, really romantic and funny.
Oh, I'd love to see that,
Nina exclaimed, getting more and more excited.
Would you please take me?
That sounded a little forward when it came out of her mouth.
Whoa, slow down, Seidler, she told herself. But to her great delight, Jerry said,
Awesome idea!
That's right, she realized. I did tell Lindsay I wanted us to be really, really good friends.
She was so jazzed. She was so pumped. She couldn't believe it. It was like her heart's dream was coming true. She was so excited she was almost afraid to have any chips or anything else to eat. She wasn't sure she trusted her belly to keep it down.
And now she had a date to see him again after this.
And then Friday there's a movie coming out supposed to be, really good. It's called Footloose.
She gasped, letting the 80s speak influence her.
Oh my god, I totally love Footloose!
What? Oops.
I mean, I totally love Footloose, she corrected herself. It just sounds really cool. Really cool title, you know?
She watched as he inserted the VHS tape into the VCR.
Wow, she thought. That must be state-of-the-art right about now.
Then her eyes grew in amazement to see him actually twist one of the knobs on the TV manually to turn it on, and then turn the other knob to the VCR's location at Channel 3.
Wow, she mentally repeated.
They opened the chips and settled in to watch the movie, laughing as it progressed. About midway through, Nina worked up her courage to slink her fingers between his, interlock them, and hold his hand. He welcomed the gesture. She celebrated a little inside.
My gosh, he's so young, said Nina, who was used to seeing Steve Martin in his 60s.
Well, he's not exactly like our age, chuckled Jerry.
Letting a few more minutes go by, Nina brought her socked feet up on the cushion beside her, slipped her free arm around his, keeping their fingers linked, and rested her head on his shoulder, just hoping he wouldn't mind. This he was quite okay with as well. Practically Nina's entire life was being made this evening, little by little. She could barely contain her growing joy. In a way, it was somewhat artificial, as she had to wish to make this happen, and her fairy godmother granted it for her, and thank goodness right about now Jerry couldn't read her mind, but she was holding out hope that this could possibly turn into something genuine. As for Jerry, his feelings and familiarity towards Nina may have been modified as well by the elaborate wish, but he was thoroughly enjoying himself too. The soft, feminine body beside him resting on his felt nice and warm, and he was getting the feeling that she cared about him, maybe even as more than friends. He wasn't sure if he should attempt to find out or not. After a little more than an hour had passed through the movie, neither of them was paying very much attention to it anymore. Nina had nestled her head into Jerry's shoulder, both of them resting against the back of the couch, her neck craned to an angle where she could gaze up into his heart-dizzying face. When Jerry glanced at her, her eyes sparkled with the adoration she'd felt for him since day one, that same silly smile putting the rosy, blushy life in her cheeks. The movie was beginning to wind down to a close, the two of them exchanging more eye contact and come-hither expressions. At last, Jerry chose a fateful moment to toss the caution to the wind, lean down, and kiss her. The kiss lasted just a brief second, resulting in Nina's face morphing into an unreadable portrait of astonishment and euphoria. In a million years, she never would have guessed he would have been the one to set the wheels of affection in motion. Every part of Nina Seidler's body, literally every part without a single exception, responded to the solitary short 1 second lip lock. Though she would have been hesitant to admit it, that was all it took. Her juices were officially in motion. Jerry, who was starting to become pretty swept away himself, struggled to hold on to some rational thinking. When he saw the countenance of amazement her face had become, he turned apprehensive.
I'm sorry, he didn't know if he should be apologetic or not. Not sure I should have done...
Nina threw her arms around him, jumped on top of him, and pinned him down on the couch underneath her, smothering his face with her lips. She clenched her hands into fists, flexed her arms to her maximum strength, and pressed him into her embrace as hard as she could. She ground her breasts against him, wishing she could surgically sew their bodies together. Wishing she could...
Oh, Lindsay.
Whoa, Nina. On second thought, don't do that, she told herself. Lindsay is not the image we need right now.
Jerry reacted under his slacks. Nina felt it, right between the legs, and her hormones went wild with desire. The sensation turned her on so much she swore she could feel and hear her vagina beeping under her dress. She entangled her legs around Jerry's and pressed herself down on him, almost crushing his bones.
You know, little Nina, I'm suddenly very, very glad we did what we did the other night, she communicated down to her pussy. If we hadn't, I'm not sure we'd have had the nerve to do this.
They had to take 2 seconds out to break for from the kiss just to gasp for some air. Both of them felt sweat breaking out on their foreheads. Their hearts were in a race to see whose could beat faster. Their genitals seemed to draw to each other like magnets. Nina's pussy asked her mind, "I want him. I want him. Can I keep him? Huh? Can I? Please, please, please?" And unbeknownst to her, Jerry's dick was asking him basically the same thing. They telepathically read each other's thoughts, knowing they were of one mind. Having green-lit each other, Nina clumsily picked herself up off him and started yanking everything off. Jerry's legs were a little too drained of blood to move himself, so he started sliding all his clothes off lying on the couch. It barely took 2 minutes and they were both stark to the bone. Nina lowered herself beside him on the couch as they resumed making out, melding their mounds of naked flesh together. Nina played with Jerry's chest hair. His hand went further south on her. She cried, tongue and lips in the line of duty. She was melting all over him like hot fudge. His fingers were slipping Nina's pussy generous doses of manual love, and she was lapping it up like a thirsty dog. She wanted to reciprocate and fondle and stroke his cock, but she wasn't sure how. She didn't want to do him any harm. But little Nina volunteered to take care of that herself. "Give me that hot dick! I want his dick!" the dripping pussy shouted at her owner. "Please let me have that beautiful dick!" Again, little Nina was in charge right now. She pried her mouth's lips off him and said, "Would you put it inside me?" He reacted with surprise. "Oh, don't get carried away," she told herself. "But just the tip," she amended. "Okay." Nina put her arm around Jerry and turned his body over onto his side along with hers. They continued making out. Jerry's hands roved her torso, caressing and squeezing her breasts and her back as Nina opened her pussy's lips with one hand and softly wrapped the other hand around his cock, guiding its head into her waiting, yearning, starving cunt. Somehow, once her right hand fed Jerry's cock inside her, it also acquired a certain technique to fondle and grope the rest of his dick and balls. Her pussy must have been conveying instructions to her hand, she could only figure. Again, just like on herself, she knew her hand was doing something right as she heard him groan through the everlasting kiss. And gradually, though neither of them planned it, more than just the head of his dick entered her. Her pussy overrode her mind and drew the cock further in. A wonderful sensation of being the only two people on Earth settled over them. The movie ended and the tape rewound on its own. The roses drank up the water in the vase. The clocks ticked. Outside, the world peacefully spun its merry way. 4 minutes later, Jerry detached from the kiss to tell her, "I have to take it out. I'm gonna come." He fastened his own hand around it. Neither of them especially wanted him to, but he finally plucked his dick out and his hand took over, jerking himself off. "Ooh," both Nina's thought. Little Nina was disappointed her visitor had to depart, but watching him stroking himself, the way his muscle flexed as his hand moved up and down on his cock was pretty marvelous too, making the rest of his body burst with lust. He was moaning and shouting, awaiting his imminent climax. Nina couldn't declare her love for him sufficiently. She couldn't care less how old they were or what year it was. She never wanted to leave him. She found that her mouth had become jealous of his hand. She realized she wanted to suck his dick so bad. She wanted to suck it so much, but she would rather learn better how to do it first. Her pussy was cheering, pulling her hand down to join it. "We don't have to fantasize about it," Nina said to her elated vagina. "It's happening right in front of us. He's stroking his hard cock for us right here and now." 10 seconds later, she saw something else she never thought she'd see. Jerry came. Wildly. The essence squirted out of the tip of his throbbing, reddened dick, flying in every direction. It was mesmerizing to see. Some of it landed on her, belly, her thighs, her legs. It felt hot and gooey, and as if the sight of him shooting off his prize wasn't enough of a turn-on for her, his hot love jizz christening Nina's body as well set off a chain reaction within her that catapulted her over the edge right along with him. Their respective orgasmic shrieks harmonized into a duet of mutual paradise. Nina breathed into Jerry's torso, and her teeth gnawed into his flesh until she left him a hickey, which he barely even noticed. Jerry couldn't believe the evening could have taken such a spectacularly carnal twist. If he didn't know better, he would have sworn this girl came out of a different dimension, or a different time, to be with him tonight and give him an evening he'd never forget. His eyes fluttered. He somehow knew this girl. She was a friend. And now she had become much more than a friend. And yet, where did he first meet her? For the life of him, he couldn't remember. Where did she come from? Nina couldn't believe it either. The object of her affections, her dreams, her fantasies, her desires, had actually returned her passion and romantic fire, and they had made love. Blissful, heaven-sent love. She never wanted this moment to end. Her head again settled upon his shoulder and chest as both bodies shut down in magnificent splendor, and unconsciousness took over. "I love you, my sweetheart," she mouthed into his chest hair. February 14th, 9:36 a.m. A 20-year-old Nina Elizabeth Seidler and a 20-year-old Gerald Allen Watkins awoke together, lying in the precise same physical positions in which they'd fallen asleep on his sofa in 1984. They were now dressed again in Nina's present-day bed. As they woke, once more in each other's arms, they smiled and shared a soft kiss, before Nina realized what was now happening. Gerald actually knew what the deal was this morning, but Nina didn't. Seeing that they were not only clothed again, but in a completely different setting than they'd fallen asleep in, she sat up abruptly. Nina noticed that everything was normal in her 2014 bedroom again. Before she could ask any questions, they heard a familiar voice. "Oh, good, you're up." They turned in its direction to see her sitting in Nina's computer chair. "Lindsay?" she asked. At the same time, Jerry overlapped her and said, "Oh, hey, Lindsay." Jerry now turned surprised along with Nina. This made them turn back to each other and ask in unison, "You know her?" Lindsay couldn't help smiling, both in amusement and satisfaction. The opening part of her job, introducing herself to a wisher in need, did become incredibly annoying on a regular basis, trying to convince said wisher that she wasn't insane, hence her apathy and listlessness the first night, Nina having just met her, but the fruits of her labor really were very rewarding. Nina turned back to her sitting up.
"Lindsay, what's going on?"
"You know, funny you should ask that, baby doll," said Lindsay. "Turns out after I dropped you off for your date, I got another wish notification from 2014. It was Jerry."
Nina turned around to Jerry in even greater surprise before Lindsay went on.
"Turns out 50 has its hazards. While his 20-year-old self was with you, his 50-year-old self took a spill and broke his hip."
Nina gasped. "Oh my God!" she exclaimed in dismay and a bit of fright, turning back to him. "Darling, are you okay?"
"Ah, he's fine now, don't worry," Lindsay told her. "He's just not 50 anymore. Unfortunately, Wendy wasn't with him when it happened. She was at a work thing of hers where she was getting a little, friendly with a younger male co-worker."
Nina gaped at her incredulously. "You're kidding me! I'll kill her!"
Jerry chuckled. "It's okay, Nina. Actually, it's pretty ironic, but we should be thanking her. If I hadn't found out about that, I wouldn't have chalked it up to my age, and I wouldn't have wished I was 20 again."
Nina was astonished. So that must have been how he met Lindsay. and apparently she had also been right about something else in the process. Her mind returned to her thoughts about nice people inexplicably choosing mean people for mates, and this seemed to ring true in Gerald's case. Well, it might have taken a few wishes, but they appeared to have reversed this rule. So, see, Nina, when I made Jerry 20 again, he suddenly remembered your Valentine's Eve together in 84. It became fresh in his mind, and he realized how much he liked you. And he asked me if I could bring you and him together again, and here you are. Nina was a little confused, though she was seeing most of this as good news. So, it's 2014, and Jerry's 20, and we're together?
You got it, Lindsay confirmed. I changed his age, but I kept him in the present just for you.
Nina was so touched and happy she again wanted to start crying. She jumped out of her bed.
Oh my gosh, Lindsay, thank you! She cried, hugging Lindsay. I love you!
Yeah, all right, it's okay, said Lindsay. Save a little for your boyfriend.
Boyfriend. The word, in context of Jerry, of course, made Nina's spirits soar. She jumped back in bed with him and cuddled him up snug and tight. It looked like she had a playmate for Valentine's Day after all. A moment later, again came the knock on her open door.
Morning, honey, said Sally.
Mom?
Nina said, getting up again. She opened the door to see her 47-year-old mother. Suddenly, she was a child again.
Mommy! Oh my God, I'm so happy to see you!
Sally laughed.
Nina, what got into you today?
She chuckled. She waved inside.
Hi, Jerry.
Her mom wandered off. Nina turned to Lindsay, wide-eyed, and held up a finger, as if about to ask another question.
It's all good, Lindsay reassured her. You guys didn't have sex last night, you literally just slept together. And your mom and dad know that, and they're cool with it. Little bonus I threw in for you. Happy V-Day.
Wow, Nina shook her head.
Did Steph still win the lottery?
Oh yeah, said Lindsay. The boys are really going gaga over her now.
Lindsay spun around in the chair. From out of nowhere, she produced the vase from Jerry's house with the dozen roses in it. Sitting the vase on the dresser, she stood up, gave a stretch, picked up her purse, and took out her nail file wand, heading out the bedroom door.
Well, duty calls. I'm history. You guys ever need anything else, you know what to do.
She slipped out of view and was gone. Naturally high in her euphoric state, Nina dropped back into her bed again.
I can't believe we actually get to be together, she giggled.
They kissed, limbs tangling around each other.
Hmm, said Jerry. Actually, darling, he said, I'm sorry to do this, but it is still Friday and I do still have to go to work.
Oh, that's okay, purred Nina, stroking his cheek, batting her dewy eyes. Your absence only makes my heart grow fonder. Jerry got out of the bed and finished getting dressed.
So, honey bunny, what do you want to do tonight? He asked her.
Nina rolled over on her belly and put her head on her arms, looking up at him.
Well, love dove, maybe you could take me to the symphony, please?
I love the symphony. He said it with such passion, Nina's whole body lit up. She realized she wouldn't be able to wait for him to come home from work. She had some breakfast and waited for Jerry and her parents to depart, giggling excitedly to herself. Next stop, hot koozie.